Hello and welcome to the AFPT Comics Podcast, episode 154. We're in January 2022.
Holy cow.
The first episode of the year. Nathan Simmons, how you doing?
I'm old now.
Oh no!
How long have I been sleeping?
The ghosts of Christmas future.
Yeah, it is weird. Like, this is very hacky, Twittery joke, but I do feel in some ways like we're in, 2020 part three.
True.
But I'm also, there's some cool stuff coming up.
Yeah.
In the world of comics, there's things to be excited about for folks who, are fine not leaving their homes. So, yeah, man, I'm excited to kick off a new year talking about comics. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. I was incredibly busy. I had the last 2 weeks off, but I was still doing AIPT every day.
Sure.
With news, but also previews and getting interviews set up for the future weeks as well.
Yeah, we've got some fun stuff coming up.
AIPT just ran a really interesting article, Most Anticipated Comics Out in 2022, at least.
Sure.
For what we know, because you can only go out so many months with solicitations.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I'm really excited for this year. I'm hoping that, like you said, maybe 2020 can end and we can get on with ourselves. But if you're not familiar with this show, this is the AFPT Comics Podcast, where we talk about the latest news, review comics, have guests on, and more. This week, we have Samira Ahmed on to talk about Ms. Marvel, her new miniseries that kicked off, 2 weeks ago now? Mm-hmm. We get into, her approach with Kamala Khan and what other characters might pop up. If you read the first issue, Loki shows up at the end, so there's some fun stuff going on there. But she's predominantly known for her YA books. She's won awards, too, for it. So we talk a little bit about that. Like, are there writing techniques she uses in her YA writing, in comics writing?
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that. That's later in the show. But before we get to that, let's recap the biggest news of the week. And this week, I don't think there's any bigger news than Image Comics staffers voting to unionize as Comic Book Workers United.
This rules.
So they voted 7-2. So there was 9 people who voted. Yeah. And they are now officially recognized by the National Labor Relations Board, which is a 700,000 member Communication Workers of American Union.
First comic book publishing company, to unionize.
In America, so what could this mean? Now, again, if you don't know, this is only the Image Comics staffers. This isn't, creators, artists, writers, stuff like that. These are the people that are behind the scenes.
But it opens the door for that, which is so exciting.
It does, yeah. It makes it possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen so many creators on Twitter, just giving props to this, being excited for this.
Yeah.
I think I saw Cody Ziegler, who was just on the show a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited for this. I mean, we've talked about this for years, right? At this point, like, creators don't have healthcare. They may not be getting the best rates depending on the publisher. Some publishers are practically preying on creators and paying them almost nothing. And unions would be a big step forward in resolving that kind of issue.
Absolutely. And it would be exciting to see who else, to see how this, Comic Book Workers United, how it expands, and see, if other people at other companies are inspired by this. It's really cool. It's a good feeling to start the year with.
What's interesting, I was looking at the Comic Book Workers United webpage. They had posted about this, and they said 12 staffers submitted ballots. At this time, I'm reading directly from their thing, 3 staffers' ballots are subject to a frivolous legal challenge on eligibility. Thus, their ballots were not opened. What's the drama there? I'm curious.
I'm sure that'll develop. I'm imagining maybe it's someone in a higher position or something like that. Or,
who voted
someone
no.
Someone disputing work for hire contracts or it's not clear. And I think that they're being very smart by not giving away too many details until that's settled. But it's also cool to see that even though they lost literally a fourth of the votes, they still were able to pass it.
Yeah, no, it's just really exciting, and we'll see how this develops over the year.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned. In other Image Comics news, Jeff Lemire, you might know him from a billion comics ever written.
Every comic book.
Has inked an exclusive deal with Image Comics. Just a few weeks ago, he and Andrea Sorrentino announced The Bone Orchard Mythos, which Sorrentino will be devoting 100% of his time to. It's a horror universe that they're developing. that is not part of Gideon Falls or Primordial. But this is huge news for Image. Jeff Lemire, as you know, Nathan, has been doing an incredible job on Robin and Batman, miniseries with Dustin Nguyen.
And Swamp Thing Green Hell just launched and rules.
Yeah, I mean, he's done a lot of really cool DC stuff over the last few years. And then he's got Black Hammer at Dark Horse. And if you're worried, oh no, is he not going to finish Black Hammer? He actually took to his Substack, sent out a newsletter saying he's got, I think, 3 planned series that will continue, that will be finished in the next 2 years. So technically, he's not exclusive to Image this year in a way, but he's not going to be doing any more new work with anyone but Image.
Yeah, and for in 2022 and 2023, he's releasing Black Hammer Reborn, Madam Dragonfly, and Black Hammer The End.
I gotta say,
this
news about Black Hammer really intrigued me because, like, not, I mean, if you don't know, this is actually being developed into a TV show, Black Hammer. And, you know, this is a massive universe that he's developed. I assumed, like, you know, Marvel and DC would just continue on forever, but he's clearly ending it. He's finishing it off.
I kind of like that. I kind of like that he's giving, you know, now this show is being adapted from something that has a specific end point.
Right, right.
So, you know, maybe that's a his way of kind of guiding that, you know, series forward. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, after this, he will be, you know, he'll be working for Image or working at Image. Sorry, he'll be making projects for Image, but he'll continue releasing his Substack projects as well.
Right.
So anybody who's, you know, excited for all the stuff that he's announced through his Substack, like Fish Flies, are still going to get that.
This is I mean, Lemire is God, right? We've talked about this a million times. He's one of the hardest working, most producing writers out there right now.
He never stops.
And he does everything. He does sci-fi. He does, you know, humanitarian sort of stories. He does fantasy. He does superheroes, of course. I saw this news was posted on Reddit and someone said, Jeff Lemire is going to be only inking comics going forward. And I had to laugh. Because Jeff Lemire inks exclusive
dudes. Right.
Sorry, that was a terrible joke.
Fantastic. I think that it's interesting that he's doing this because he's on the verge of becoming a household name outside of comics. You know, with Sweet Tooth already out, Black Hammer on the way, Descender on the way. I mean, this is the right time for him to get cozy, I think.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think Gideon Falls is going to be a show on HBO, right?
I believe so.
Wild, wild stuff. In other news, this is a tad old, but I want to talk about it. Miracle Man is getting a full omnibus at Marvel Comics sometime in September 2022. We don't have an exact date yet, but this is, of course, following the Timeless number one one-shot that revealed at the last page, spoilers, that Miracle Man is somehow going to be used in Marvel Comics in this year.
I think it's fine because literally 3 hours after that issue hit store shelves, Marvel was tweeting like, did you guys fucking see Miracle Man's in this?
And then you were texting me going, dude, they already spoiled the big thing. That was funny. So, like a day later, Marvel announced this omnibus. And if you look at the issues that are in this supposed Absolute Edition, I say supposed because it is actually missing Neil Gaiman and Mark Buckingham's issues, which I think ran from 17 to 24. And issue 25 is supposedly actually created and done and has been for decades, but never been released.
They've been talking about putting out the end of their run for years. I mean, I feel like it was like in 2014 when Gaiman said at a convention, like, oh, yeah, we're coming back with more Miracle Man. But I think the rights issues just keep mutating and getting worse.
Right, right. Yeah, there's an article on amputcomics.com that kind of goes into that where Todd McFarlane bought the rights. He bought Eclipse Comics and thought he owned the rights to Miracle Man and thus sued to take ownership. And obviously he wanted to do something with it at Image Comics.
Right.
That eventually he lost and Gaiman won the rights to it. And then I remember thinking it was such a badass move. When he won that, he also won the rights to Angela, to which he gave Marvel.
Right.
I wonder if he gave it to them for like a penny.
Like Stephen King. It's just like, this is one of my dollar babies.
Exactly, yeah. But if you're unfamiliar with Miracle Man, it's a character that was not created by Alan Moore, but Alan Moore very much infused it with some updating for superheroes at the time.
Yeah.
In an adult way, you get this superhero that is not unlike Dr. Manhattan in a sense, this superpowered superhero. I think maybe nostalgia has made it a lot more interesting than it might be, but I am very curious to see.
Oh yeah, I reread it a few years ago.
Yeah,
and I think most of it holds up.
It does.
I mean, there's some stuff that feels very much of its time, but there's so much interesting stuff where it's literally like it deconstructs older stories and shows them in a new light and tells you like there's always been this darkness in superhero comics. It's just now we're allowed to express it and things aren't always the way that you think they are. And yeah, I'm very excited to check this out. Do we have a pricing on this yet?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
But I will say, I wonder if Neil Gaiman's issues aren't in this because he may be working on the series himself with Buckingham, and maybe they're going to finish their run, thus Marvel is waiting for that to happen to collect just the Neil Gaiman and Buckingham years.
That was always, from what I understood, that was the plan, was Marvel was going to do these kind of prestige reprints of the original run, and then once they caught, it was kind of like that Ninja Turtles Urban Legends series, where like once they caught up with the original run, then the new issues would come out.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's still the plan.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to find out. I know on Twitter, someone asked him if he was going to pick up the series, and he said, wait and see, or something like that. So he didn't say no.
It would be nice. I mean, it would be nice to get that conclusion, especially if they're bringing the character back. It would be nice to know where he was meant to go.
Right. And then
even if they have to build it into whatever new series is coming out, just to kind of get...
Yeah, close closure. The chapter. Yeah, and then then Marvel can do whatever they want with it after.
Because it's been nearly 30 years since the last issue came out. Yeah.
I mean, Gaiman, back in October last year, said this was his breakthrough as a writer. Alan Moore gave him this, and he picked it up and went with it, and then that's how his comics career started. So this is incredibly important to Gaiman, too.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, because at one point he was supposed to take over Swamp Thing, and it was out of respect for the writers that had come before him that he didn't do it.
Right,
like he was like, and then that that led to so much more work for him eventually.
Right, right. Stay tuned, though. We will likely have new information on Miracle Man at some point. I'm going to guess we'll get a series. What, September? Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, sometime this year, I would imagine.
Gotta be with the timeless big reveal at the end,
right?
Talking about reveals, there was
no one would introduce characters from an Alan Moore story and then not do anything with them for years.
Yeah, no, that would be a really bad idea, and it would be a blight on your entire publishing line.
Yeah, especially if you're building a whole bunch of stuff around a maxi series that's just not coming out.
Watchmen. Talking about important stories, we got a ton of new information about three specific X-Men titles coming out in April, two of which are brand new series that have never been published before. One called Legion of X, another X-Men Red, and then, of course, we got some details on Ben Percy and Adam Kubert's Wolverine, which is picking up after X-Lives of Wolverine, X-Deaths of Wolverine. So if you dig into these articles that were posted on AMPT, you'll see Legion of X is a procedural story that's written by Cy Spurrier with art by Jan Basaldia, who she's done an exceptional job with the Black Widow series. I forget the name, Winter Guard, that is just so good with action. And then we've got X-Men Red, which is a Storm-led book set on Arako's Mars. It's got Magneto and Vulcan too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then Wolverine has Deadpool. That's it. That's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, this is fun. I mean, look, everybody's in, we don't know a ton about these stories so far, but, you put Nightcrawler dual wielding swords on a cover and I'm interested.
Right. Totally. Likely, Spurrier will continue the ideas he had in Way of X in this some way, because Nightcrawler was a huge part of that. Oh, I didn't mention that X-Men Red is written by Al Ewing with art by Stefano Casali. So yeah, that'll probably be a lot of people's favorites. I know Sword was a lot of people's favorites, and he wrote that one as well.
I gotta say also, I appreciate in the solicit for Legion of X, or in the press release, Spurrier said, like, I wanted to do a Precinct-style ensemble story. Krakoa needs peacekeepers. But he makes sure, he's like, do not think of them as cops. These are not cops.
right.
I love. You won't get far in Krakoa if the limit of your imagination is beating people up or reaching for a gun. And I fucking love that.
It's also interesting, the solicit talks about how non-mutants could be on this team too. So yeah, maybe this is outside of Krakoa. There's like a
rotating cast. Yeah.
Right. Juggernaut's on there too. But stay tuned. We'll likely have more information on those series as we go forward into the year with X-Men Monday and the rest. In other Marvel Comics news, Marvel somewhat randomly released the solicit for Hulk number 6. I say randomly because I don't know why they needed to tell us about Hulk number 6, but it is the end of Donny Cates and Ryan Ottley's first story arc, and it will feature Hulk's null.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was that tweet where it was just like, in 2018, you met God's Hulk, and now you'll meet Hulk's Null.
Right.
Or something like that. Interesting. I mean, I don't want to be mean about this, but it is weird that that's how they're choosing to advertise it, is to literally say, like, you've seen this before.
Yeah. You like that? You'll like this. Which is weird, too. Also, it's the end of an arc. The arc isn't about this, and yet they're making it about this for some reason.
So, in other words, they're also spoiling a reveal, kind of.
True.
It's just such a weird way to advertise it. I will say, I'm digging this run just for how bonkers it is so far.
Sure.
But, I guess we'll see how that plays out. It's just a very, I don't know, like I said to you before we started recording, like, it would almost be like DC when Scott Snyder took over Justice League being like, soon you'll meet Superman's Mr. Bloom, you know?
right. That's funny. I mean,
the Batwoman who laughs.
It makes me wonder. Happening. Do you think maybe the sales aren't great for Hulk and they want him to be better? And like, they're trying to like tell, you know, readers, look, it's Venom, but Hulk.
I think maybe they're cognizant of my biggest issue with the series so far, where I like it, but I need to know it's going somewhere, because we're 2 issues in with some bombastic action that looks incredible, but I don't know what the point is or where the characters are coming from or where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
So I really need something to root me. And maybe they're just like, this does mean something, we promise.
Right.
I get the intention behind it, but it is a very odd way to phrase it.
I'm surprised nobody's selling this because it's coming out on 420. No one's made that connection.
The big green guy.
Could you imagine if the cover was just like a big pot leaf, like with Hulk's face?
Honestly, if Spencer's doesn't already have that shirt, what are we even doing here?
True that. Talking about offensive materials, or maybe not. Image Comics released some new information about Loaded Bible 2, which is coming out in March. This one's written by Tim Seeley, Steve Orlando, and drawn by Giuseppe Cafaro. It's coming out March 2nd, and this is actually a sequel to the book Loaded Bible. And Nathan, tell us what it's about.
It's about Jesus's vampire hunting clone. And
salt.
My God, and this series is about him fighting Dracula himself. And I gotta say, man, like, how the fuck did I didn't know about Loaded Bible. Like, the first one, I missed it completely. Yeah. And now I've got a trade to hunt down, man. Like, this sounds rad. I mean, it's some of my favorite creators working together to tell a really bonkers, grindhousey kind of story.
Could you imagine if there was like a lost chapter in the Bible where he's actually like a vampire hunter?
That's like That's one of my favorite tropes in those kinds of and like religious thrillers. It's like, actually, this storyline was left out of the Bible, but it's true. You remember
right
in the movie Constantine, like, yeah. Keanu Reeves says, there's actually 36 Bible 36 chapters in the Bible in hell, like, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. It just opens it up.
I love it. And it's literally a Bible, like, covered in tar. It's my favorite thing.
Listeners, if you want to check us in March, make sure we have this on our best of or most anticipated sections of the show.
I have a date with this book now. This sounds so fun.
Putting in his calendar now, folks.
I love Cafaro's statement in the press release, which is just, it's amazing to be with Tim and Steve on this project, especially if it's an ultra violent and super fun book for Image Comics. So he's like me. Like, I feel that.
That's funny. Some other Tim Seeley news. Vault Comics has been teasing creative duos all week. We don't know any details on the books they are doing or the titles, but we do know that Tim Seeley, Aaron Campbell, and Jim Terry are doing a book. Brian Shermer and Elena Gogu are doing a book. Michael Moreci and Nathan Gooden are doing a book.
Yeah.
Zach Kaplan, John Pearson are doing a book. And Dennis Hopeless and Victor Ibanez are doing titles for Vault Comics in 2022. Mm-hmm. These were revealed.
We love Vault over at AIPT, so very excited to see these.
You gave Barbaric a 10 out of 10 a couple times, I think.
Barbaric was one of my favorite books of the year. Barbaric's great. Heavy's really fun. They're putting out some excellent stuff. I'm really looking forward to We Ride Titans. There's some really fun stuff coming out.
Moreci and Gooden, they did Barbaric, didn't they, together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So their title might be another Barbaric book. Maybe. We don't know.
I know that they said they want to expand the world. Barbaric's going to come back for another run this year, which I think is a vampire story, if I'm not mistaken. So exciting.
Yeah, it'd be really cool to see what these people come up with. You can kind of, if you look at the artist's work and the writer's work, you can kind of guess, like, oh, this one will probably be a sci-fi or this one will be a horror. But stay tuned. We'll find out more about that as the year goes on. In our next segment, standout.
Kapow!
Moment of the week.
I was on it this week. No pause.
This is our favorite moment from a comic book that came out this week. And Nathan, what was your favorite Kapow moment of the week?
Let me just send it on over, Dave. My standout moment came from Dark Knights of Steel number 3, which I've been quite enjoying, but there's a sequence where Azala, Clark's sister in this timeline, is set during a sort of medieval take on the DC universe where Jor-El and Lara made it to Earth and raised a family and kind of claimed their own land. The Metal Men are just a group of knights who are out investigating a meteor that has fallen to Earth, and they are attacked by Zala. And she punches through one of them in this incredibly violent sequence. But I just thought, I love the lettering right here from Wes Abbott that sort of acts as an impact point. as she punches through, where it just feels like it's an elegant solution to covering up gore in the book and still making it feel visceral. And it's just it's an excellent image, but man, that's perfect use of lettering right there.
It's really cool. Do you think they put the lettering there for style or to actually cover?
Because I think it's a little bit of both. Uh-huh. I think it's a little bit of both because the effect itself, this rink kind of sound, is is stylized with an almost blood red, almost giallo colored blood red.
True.
It's a perfect lineup between Wes Abbott's lettering and Yasmin Putri's artwork that I just thought was really clever.
I reviewed this issue and I liked it. I think it's like popcorn comics in that it's beautifully drawn. Incredibly well
I did
acted.
Feel like this one was a little slower. Yeah. But this sequence I thought was really excellent.
She's mental, man. She's just killing left and right.
It's pretty wild. And I love this version of Lois Lane also as sort of like the consort between the Amazons and the Land of Men.
Right. I like how Wonder Woman looks younger too in the series.
Yeah, almost there's some like really interesting character designs. Mm-hmm. I love that you know, John Constantine wearing a red scarf instead of a tie to still have that bit of iconography. They've found really clever ways of introducing design elements that we know.
Totally. My standout moment was from Thor, number 20 by Donny Cates and Nick Klein.
Uh-huh.
This issue is predominantly about the God of Hammers and how the God of Hammers is actually real.
Uh-huh.
This is a huge spoiler because this is the last page of the issue. So Loki explains that the God of Hammers is destined to destroy the entire Earth and hammer it down into something new, but destroy it all.
Uh-huh.
And in the last few pages, Thor goes to Earth. Everything's destroyed. I don't know what's going on. But he's Mjolnir has been flying around the universe, like, killing people.
Mm-hmm.
Mjolnir comes at him, knocks him out. And then in the final page, we learn Mjolnir is the God of Hammers. Mjolnir is an entity, a living, thinking entity.
Yeah.
And in the picture that you can see on AIPTComics.com on this podcast post, if you want to see it, is like an energy character, clearly female with long hair, and she's holding Mjolnir in her hand, but she is also Mjolnir.
Yeah. Like, and there's also like head trip. The energy coursing through is kind of formed like almost a skeletal structure inside. Right. This is a hell of a character design.
It reminds me of the blue Superman in the 90s. Remember that?
Sure. Superman for a new millennium.
I don't know if I agree with the story idea because it literally reshapes what we think of Mjolnir, but was always just a hammer. I know that Jason Aaron did introduce the idea that Mjolnir was made from some sort of, you know, space storm, but this takes it a step further, and that Mjolnir is actually a thinking creature, character, person, thing.
Right.
And it's a bold reveal, and I was just kind of taken aback by it and like, holy crap, Donny Cates with his big splashy ideas, he's back at it again. Part of me wonders, is he running out of ideas? But the story is still playing out. We don't know anything beyond this reveal so far.
Yeah, it's a bold move. We'll bold see how it plays Cotton. Out. Bold move, Cotton.
In our next segment, our top books of the week, we're going to talk about our top two favorite comics out this week.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go first.
Yeah.
I really liked Inferno number 4 by Jonathan Hickman, Valerio Schiti, and Stefano Casali. This is the wrap-up of Jonathan Hickman's 4-issue Inferno series, and also the wrap-up of him as the head of X in the X-Men office. So, highly anticipated book, utilizing Moira, Xavier, and Magneto as the main characters, but also Mystique and Destiny. Mm-hmm. To catch you up really quick, Moira wanted Destiny killed because, well, Destiny killed her in one of her lives. That's part of the reason. And Xavier and Magneto refused to bring Destiny back, even though Mystique is her lover and wanted her back. And in the series, Destiny was brought back to life. And now Destiny and Mystique want revenge on Moira. Moira is, of course, a mutant that when she dies, the entire universe is rebooted, restarted. But she remembers everything. She retains all information. So the crux of this issue is Magneto and Xavier want to stop Moira and Destiny from killing, Destiny and Mystique from killing Moira and preventing them from reversing everything they've accomplished with Krakoa. Meanwhile, Nimrod and I forget his sidekick there are totally fighting to the death with Magneto and Xavier. So there's like tons of really cool action with Xavier and Magneto particularly, which you don't often see them teaming up and going full force with their powers, which is really cool. But I think the reason why this is my second favorite book of the week is because Hickman clearly had an ending in mind for Hawks and Pox. And we get a quick Cliff Notes version of it done in one issue here. We pretty much get the finish to this era, but in a way that allows Krakoa to go on and, of course, continue into 2022. And I think he's gone on record to say, you know, he had an ending and it would all be rebooted at some point, which can still happen, of course. But it's interesting to see, you know, Hawks and Pox is one of the greatest comics story arcs ever. Like, the ideas of it are so profound.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it got me back into X-Men. I mean, that takes some doing at that time.
So to see him get to tell his sort of ending in a very smaller way is kind of cool. And it's a nice send-off for him, especially with the incredible art by these artists. They're just some of the best in the business.
Definitely.
But what was your second favorite book of the week?
My second favorite book of the week was Wastelander's Doom, number one, by Torin Grønbech and Julius Ota. This really surprised me. I mean, I've been digging these Wastelander's one-shots, but this one kind of took a very kind of poetic approach to Dr. Doom, going back through his history and kind of digging into what has shaped him into the man he is and what he considers to be important in that evolution. I mean, Dr. Doom ultimately is a very tragic figure who doesn't realize he's tragic because of his hubris. So
right.
It's interesting. He's taken on kind of a journey through his darkest memories, his mother being taken by Mephisto, losing the woman he loves, and ultimately giving up things that might make him a better man in order to continue to, assume more power.
Mm.
It also sort of illuminates what happened to the magical side of the Marvel Universe in the age of Old Man Logan, which is something that they've never really gotten, too deep into.
Right, right.
Yeah, I just thought this was a fantastic one-shot that kind of doesn't require a ton of familiarity with this version of the Marvel Universe, but is super rewarding for people who love Doctor Doom and his whole thing.
Yeah, this was my favorite comic of the week, and I think Torin captures the voice of Doom so well through the captions.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is Doctor Doom, well-written and exactly as he would be in a future world where he technically mm-hmm. he's beaten everyone.
Yeah.
And yet he wanders and finds that there's something amiss and needs to figure it out and stop it because of his control issues, likely.
His need to be the one who understands what's going on. Like, right. his need to be a step ahead of everybody else. I just think that's fascinating.
It's got like a almost like a fairy tale vibe to it. Like, he goes on this little journey, this magical journey.
Oh, this book is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And it does that thing again where like it communicates a whole lot in very little time. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's stuff here that like, the late reveal of a character's identity is mm-hmm. done in very clever very clever ways. I don't know. I really liked this book. It felt like it didn't have to overexplain anything while also telling a very different kind of Dr. Doom story.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, these Wastelander books are interesting because
mm-hmm.
they don't necessarily need to be told, particularly because we don't know if Marvel's going to really invest a series in this going forward. These are just a series mm-hmm. of one-shots kind of catching us up on characters.
I love a one-and-done story, right. Especially if it takes advantage of a world that we don't normally get to see.
Right, right, right. But now that I've talked about my favorite book as well,
sure.
What is your favorite book of the week?
Speaking of stories that kind of give us a different take on the Marvel Universe, yeah. I loved Elektra, Black, White, and Blood number one by Charles Soule, Mark Bagley, Edgar Delgado, Leonardo Romero, Declan Shalvey, Simone D'Armini, and a ton of other folks. This is Marvel's new anthology series, telling a series of short stories around Elektra. And each one of these, I mean, the middle one is the closest to the universe that we know, but like these are some kind of like big swings, which is mm-hmm. kind of what I love about these anthology books. The first story is Elektra fighting vampires and, getting turned into one. And, the melancholy of realizing that you can't be around the people you love anymore. And the middle story is this, hard-boiled crime story, very much like almost like Elektra in Sin City, chasing down a group of bad guys. And the third story is this sort of mythological, mythology-inspired take on, Elektra, ascending to power, but also realizing that she has to be alone in her quest. They all kind of have a very similar thematic element to them, which is that it's not fun to be Elektra, and but it's also like it's a very isolating existence that she lives. Even though she's the best at what she does, she can't allow herself to be close to anyone.
And
all throughout, it's anchored by just absolutely gorgeous and expressive artwork, very clever use of color, really interesting lettering throughout. I just, this is everything I want from an anthology book. I was very pleased with it.
Every single one of these has been turned into a Treasury Edition exercise, too. So,
yeah.
I think the Deadpool Treasury Edition came out this week as well.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I reviewed this for AIPTComics.com as well, and... it's such a cool way to like feature art by just limiting the color palette and sort of letting you soak it in that way.
And I think they also all benefit from having a little bit of breathing room instead of like, you know, six stories jammed in, it's three. And they're not, because some of the traps you can fall into with these, you know, there were a couple of stories in that Carnage miniseries where I was like, you're trying to do too much in too short of a time span. And these tell these very, like, elegant and quick stories that really hit at the heart of the character.
I'm surprised DC stopped doing Superman Red, White, and Blue. Like, this method of, like, limiting the color palette, letting the artist
I wouldn't be surprised if we get another one of those, you know, in the near future. Because, I mean, the Black, White, and Gold Wonder Woman series was great.
Oh, yeah, true.
Mm-hmm. Anytime Batman Black and White comes back, I'm there
true, true, true.
So yeah, I have a feeling that both publishers will keep trying to push these, and I'm all for it.
Who could be the next Black, White, and Blood character after Elektra?
Dupe.
Black, White, and Green.
Dupe, Black, White, and Green.
Oh, that would actually be really amazing. Actually, no, that's a fucking $100 million idea right there, because every story could be super funny but also different and weird. Oh my god, get Mike Allred
on that. Just an Omega Red one shot. We'll see how that works out.
Oh, okay. Who's a bloody, I guess Punisher could get it, but they probably, I have a feeling Marvel wants to stay away from Punisher killing
just for a minute.
Well, that's it for our top books of the week.
Widow would be perfect for one of those.
Black Widow would work. Yeah, because her whole color scheme is black and red.
Yeah, for sure. And also, and just yellow, there's so many different kinds of like spy stories. Please give me that book, please.
They could do Warhammer, but that's way off brand for them.
Oh sure.
That could actually be kind of weird.
Red Hulk.
Top books for next week. We're gonna talk about our most anticipated comic. Next week, and oh my god, we both picked DC Comics titles.
We did.
I'm going with Justice League vs. the Legion of Superheroes number 1 by Brian Michael Bendis and Scott Galuski. This is a 6-issue miniseries involving the Great Darkness, a story that harkens back to, I think, 1982. Uh-huh. I was able to interview these two just a few days ago. The interview should go live Monday or Tuesday, and I have not been super hot on Bendis necessarily in the last couple of years, but having to sit down and read this to prepare for an interview, I was really blown away by how well Godlewski draws so many characters on one page talking. If you like dialogue, you'll love this book.
Those group scenes are really well done, for sure.
What is your most anticipated book?
I'm really looking forward to Robin and Batman number 3 by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. This is the conclusion to the miniseries showing the early days of Dick Grayson as Robin. And it's going to tie together this storyline that's been playing out in the background of Killer Croc recognizing Dick Grayson from the circus and trying to hunt down whoever Batman's new partner is, because he's pretty sure that he's figured it out already, because Killer Croc... can put two and two together when he sees a kid in an acrobat costume. But yeah, man, this has been a really fantastic miniseries, kind of playing off of, you know, what the psychology would be of a kid out for revenge, and what kind of a person, what kind of parts of Bruce Wayne does he have to turn off in order to be okay with enabling this?
Right.
And yeah, I think the judging from the cover of the next issue, it feels like Robin is really going to have to come into his own and figure out what kind of a hero he wants to be without Batman's guidance. So very much looking forward to seeing how this all ties together.
Man, it makes me sad. This and I guess Swamp Thing is Lemire's last DC work.
Seems like it, yeah. But he's, you know, going out with a bang. Both of these,
yeah.
Robin and Batman is so great and just beautiful. Dustin Nguyen's artwork is just perfect. I mean, the depth of emotion he's able to get out of these characters, even while they're fully costumed, is just really surprising. And and yeah, it really gets at the Robin and Batman relationship in a way that both makes Batman's actions more understandable while also alienating at the same time. Like, you're like, oh, he did really save this kid, but I also get why they didn't talk to each other for years.
Right. You know what's funny is the art style of our two top most anticipated books next week are like complete opposites.
Sure.
And I was actually, when I interviewed the Godlewski there, I asked him, like, good Lord, you have to draw so many costumes. And I remembered when I talked to Dustin Nguyen about Robin and Batman, he was saying, like, he doesn't know how people can do team books because there's so much detail in costumes. And they're like, if they're all standing around, that's like hours of work to get it right.
Sure.
But his style is so like dreamlike because, you know, of course, he uses watercolors. There's just a beauty to it that you just don't get anywhere else.
I agree.
Talking about beauty. In our next segment, Judging by the Cover Junior, we're going to talk about our favorite cover art out next week. Yeah. And if you go to AIPTComics.com and look at the webpage, you can see this cover art that we'll be explaining to you to your earbuds, your ear holes.
Yep. All of it.
What is your favorite cover out next week?
I love the cover for the Department of Truth, number 15. This is the David Romero variant cover. Is it? Yes, it is. This is the David Romero variant cover. They are investigating the origin of Mothman, which is a real sweet spot for me in terms of cryptids. And at my old podcast, I did a couple of episodes on the history of Mothman that I just always like when this guy pops up. But this this cover shows two agents shining a light on the Mothman in the woods, and it's unfurling its wings that are so long that it's pushing other trees to the side. And if you look in the wings, it's almost like there's screaming faces, like spirits baked into the light that's like shining off the wings. These kind of gossamer. He looks like a oversized moth with these big old red eyes. This is just such a striking image and has me really excited to see what their take on Mothman is going to be.
Yeah, this series is just so, God, it's so different from anything else. And the covers are too, right? I mean,
and I'm finally catching up on it. Like, I fell off for a few issues and I'm really digging it again. And just they're getting into how the Department of Truth the whole series is surrounds the idea of tulpas, which is like, if you believe in these thought forms, if you believe in something enough, it reshapes reality. If enough people believe it's true. And this apparently Mothman comes from the Department of Truth trying to create their own myth.
Interesting.
And it looks like it goes terribly wrong.
If it didn't, there would be no story.
Right.
That's funny. My favorite cover art out next week is Detective Comics number 1048. This cover is by... I had to switch because...
Oh, is it not coming out next week?
I just realized the book I picked is out a week after. The cover's by Irvin Rodriguez, and this art is hyper-realistic looking to the point where it's like, am I looking at a photograph? It has Harley Quinn clearly in like Arkham Asylum blue clothes sitting in front of a wall, a white wall, where she's painted not only on canvas, but on the wall behind the canvas.
Oh, yeah.
And I just love the idea of a painting within a painting. And it really brings out the realism of Harley's face. She looks like a real person.
Doesn't she look so proud?
She really does.
Saw the thumbnail of this image, though, you're right. Like, when I saw the thumbnail, I thought, oh, they did a photo cover next week.
Yeah. This Irvin is doing all the cover, the main covers for this the Tower story arc. That is, yeah. I think, gosh, I forget how many parts it's going to be, like maybe 6 to 12 or something. It's a mm-hmm. weekly detective comic series going through January. And every cover is just incredibly gorgeous in its own way. This one's so beautiful. And there's so many little, I love covers that let you just sort of linger. And I'm like looking around on the wall where she's written things and drawn little
Definitely.
Bat heads. And it kind of brings you into her psychology. But you're right, she's so happy. And she's drawn a very happy Batman face.
She has, yes.
Oh, good. And the paints that are like scattered on the ground too are really cool too.
Mm-hmm.
Just a really good cover.
Great.
That's
choice.
It for Judging by the Cover. Junior, in our next segment, join us as Samir Ahmed joins the show to talk about Ms. Marvel. We get into the story, her approach to the character, and more. And like, subscribe, and tell your friends about this podcast. It always helps support us.
Definitely. Thanks, guys.
Talk to you next week.
David, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. So, to start, Ms. Marvel Beyond the Limit has a few ideas at work. We've got a little bit of a spoiler here, but we've got Bollywood. We've got the multiverse. When I read a story like this, I instantly think, where did you start?
Well, I'm trying to make sure I don't give any spoilers. I think where it is. So I think if you read it, you'll see that I picked up on a tiny thing from Willow's run where they uh-huh. talk about, how Ms. Marvel gets her power, like when she yes. begins. Mm-hmm. And so that I think was really the seed.
Yeah.
And, I love a good multiverse story, mm-hmm. as does Marvel. And so I wanted to just play with that a little bit. And, the Bollywood element, that also actually is a little bit of a callback, because Kamala had talked before about how she loves Bollywood. And when I'm thinking of story ideas, I sort of start jotting notes on, with kind of like threads that I try to braid together. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of had these three things, like I wanted there to be this South Asian element and this multiverse piece. And then I wanted, for the longtime fans to be able to draw on something from, earlier in the series. So mm-hmm. that's kind of how I combined them. And then I just kind of went from there, and I brainstormed and take a ton of notes. And then it sort of led to this. And, Marvel's a really collaborative place. So I was able to, I talked ideas out with Lauren Bissom, my editor, and Caitlin O'Connell, the assistant editor, and now we have the story. And I just love the art that for the Bollywood piece. It's so awesome.
It's super
and
fun.
The color is so great. Yeah, it's really fun. And I just wanted to give, it's been a while. It's been since February when the last Ms. Marvel, when Saladin's run ended. So I wanted just to start with something that was fun and that really felt like Ms. Marvel and had all those things that fans are going to be familiar with, but give an intro to new fans, but also have her be a little bit reflective, because so much has happened to her in a very, very short time.
It's hard to believe that the character's only, I think, a little bit over 8 years old, but it feels like Ms. Marvel's been around for, I don't know, a century.
Well, she's done so many things. That's why I love that spread that Andres did with the, where I wanted to sort of think like, how can I touch on just some of the things that have happened to her? Mm-hmm. And we have that super cool double page spread yes. with the bean. And the art is just so great for that. So yeah, she's had a lot of stuff happen.
Yeah.
She needed a vacation.
Well, with the sliding time scale in Marvel, like, what is it? Like a year is only like a month or something insane.
Yes. Because she's been in high school this yeah. entire time.
Something about the first issue that really worked for me was that there's this juxtaposition of the Bollywood scene is just crazy and out there, but there are moments where Kamala is, looking at the bean in Chicago and eating donuts, like it's very human, or making jokes up in her own head. What are the chances that Kamala could become a stand-up comedian, do you think?
I think she's got jokes.
Sure.
She even says it there. She's like, I've got jokes. Why is no one around when I'm making the good ones?
Yeah.
I do like that she kind of has this like running monologue in her head and is, funny sometimes just to herself. But I, you know, what I love about this character is that, you know, she's just a girl like all the other girls. She's a, you know, she's a teenager. She's going to high school. She has, you know, family is really important. That's why it was fun to introduce this cousin that she's going to visit in Chicago. And that sort of touched base. It touches a little bit on my sort of childhood because cousins were so important to me. And so the first time that I went away from home was to visit a cousin in California, you know, an older cousin who was a good influence. So I wanted her to have that. But I just love that she's also, you know, a kid and is like, well, I've got a crush on this guy, but not anymore, but I still kind of do. And oh, it's so awkward. And my, I love my parents, but they have these expectations that I don't always agree with. And, you know, I also then have on the side an incredibly extraordinary job. So I just love that she, you know, her storylines blend all of those things. And I also appreciate her, you know, how much she loves food. So I wanted to touch on that in here too, because that's also, you know, how she re-energizes or, you know, after she's embiggened. So I just love all those things about her.
Yeah, there was a good moment where you had her kind of reflecting on what if there's a version of me in another universe that has zits or is with the boy or whatever. Like, and it's such a teenager thing, right? Like, forget the insanity of a multiverse. Like, I'm worrying about these smaller things that matter more to her right now than anything else.
Right. Because, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, could there be, could I have like a nose ring in another one?
Right,
another multiverse? What if my hair was a different color? I mean, you know, I think, you know, I taught high school for a long time. And so I think one of the things that is so cool about, you know, that age is how things that are really like heavy can almost have the same weight as like, oh my God, I can't believe I got a zit like on the first day of school.
Right.
And, you know, young people are always like sort of balancing these. And that's what lends itself to sort of, I think, great stories or storytelling for with teens.
Speaking of that scene where we see different versions of Ms. Marvel, were there any ideas that were left on the cutting room floor as far as alternate versions of her?
I'm trying to think. Gosh, it was because I wrote this one a while ago.
Oh, really? When was it written?
Well, it's been a, let's see, I guess we did the final a few months ago. I'm also writing two books at the same time as, as I was writing this. So sometimes I can't remember what I've left on the cutting room floor, as you say.
The scene where we see the Ms. Marvel with the nose ring. That's
the Polchinski box scene.
Yeah.
So no, I think I pretty much got everything. I wanted to, I figured we only had space for like four or five things. So I think we pretty much got most of the stuff that I wanted in there. But I just wanted her to have, you know, sort of different versions, but they all have a little element of Ms. Marvel in them from the Kamala, we know, right? There's like one who's eating and there's one who's, you know, taking a selfie, the one with like, you know, kissing someone. But then there's ones that are a little bit more far out, like the punk one, which I really loved. And I wanted to have that. That's just like a little nod to my 80s and 90s youth, I guess.
You write what you know, right?
Right.
A writer at AIPT, Leah Williamson, reviewed the book earlier this week, and she actually sent me this question to ask you. You know, Kamala's relationship with her supporting cast has always been a huge focal point. What characters, what might we expect pop up in the series, like Zoe or Nakia, or maybe even Kareem?
So we're definitely going to see, her friend crew from Jersey City for sure. We're going to see Bruno, we're going to see Nakia, we're going to see Zoe. And we're going to meet maybe another new person. You're going to definitely see your parents. And
how about Amulet? Yeah, so might we see Amulet?
Well,
I'm not fishing for spoilers, honestly. Don't say if you don't want to.
Well, we're not going to see Amulet in this one, I will say. Although I do love that character.
Me too.
He's really fun, and I would love to write him someday. So maybe one day down the line he'll make an appearance in there. He's just, I love this gentle giant quality to him.
Right. And it's like less threatening because his power is like shields, right?
I know, but I actually, you know, I think he, let's see, there were two different instances where he and Kamala like teamed up, and I love these because he has the thousand, I forgot what the phrase is, the thousand evil objects or whatever that he's like going after.
Right.
And I just love their team up is a good one because he's helping to shield her while, you know, while she's able to.
Which is so unique for superheroes. Most of them are blasting people.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, maybe that does, I guess that does speak to his, that sort of gentle giant quality that I was talking about, because he is this really big guy, and it's almost kind of like turning, I think Saladin almost turned that sort of like little bit of a stereotype on his head. Like he's not the guy who's going to thump you.
Like the bruiser. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's not going to thump you on the head. He's instead like this protector.
Mm-hmm. So then, you know, you talked about how important the family is, and it's so cool that you've added Razia to the family. What was it like adding another character, and was it easy to add a family member like this, or did you have to go through some checks and balances with Marvel?
Well, I of course had to make sure she ran, you know, that it works with the continuity and right. make sure it's all in there. But right. the thing that I do love about Kamala, and this is like I said, from my own experience, is that, you know, for South Asians, family is so, so important. You know, she's a child of immigrants. And I wanted to introduce another character, you know, that, I mean, she obviously has a brother, but sometimes I wanted to introduce sort of like a sisterly figure, largely because I kind of come from a matriarchy. So it was something that I could really relate to. And I just love the idea of like having this cousin that she kind of, you know, looks up to, and who's like this cool cousin that she gets to visit. And honestly, it was amazing to be able to create a new character for Marvel. And I hope that Razia will be able to come back. You know, I think when I was a kid, I also had older cousins that I kind of looked up to and admired. And, you know, when you get together, especially when you're little, when you get together, those like family, like at the Eid party or at somebody's birthday party, and there's always like that kind of cool cousin who is like a funkier haircut than you do. And, you know, maybe a tattoo, or who has like this cool job. And, I just wanted her to be able to have a little bit of that, because family is important to her and to her entire story. And it was fun to be able to introduce somebody else that maybe she could confide to one day in a different way than she does with her friends.
It was nice to see the bean too, in the Chicago location. Cause that, again, like it adds like this realism to it that you don't necessarily see in when Marvel comics are like in the space and whatnot.
Well, the bean, so Chicago's my hometown, so it was nice to be able to have that little piece in there. And the artwork around the bean is so cool. Mm. I just knew I wanted to have kind of a reflective moment for her, because, you know, the beginning is like her having a little bit of downtime, because she's like, wow, I've really been through a lot. I've been to like outer space battles. I'm being chased by people who think that we are all terrible and need to be rounded up. And I thought, well, this is a place, the bean is a structure where you can literally be reflective. And I just kind of liked, you know, I like that symbolism of it. And if you're ever in Chicago and you walk under the bean, it really does have this curve that when you look up, you see like this infinity of yourself.
And it suits Miss Marvel, who can stretch herself out, right?
Totally. And it touches on that multiverse thing. Like I'm seeing myself like infinitely. Mm-hmm. So I thought that kind of played into both of those.
Oh, that's a cool idea. I didn't even think of that until you mentioned it, but that's so smart. Andre's art is fantastic. There's a vibrancy to the book that I think suits Miss Marvel, particularly in the comics, of course. Was there a panel or a page that came back and just blew you away?
Well, the two that I really loved, I mean, I do love the double page spread under the bean where she's like reflecting on herself, but there's this image in her cousin's apartment. It's another reflection image where she's looking out, and she's looking out of the city, and she sees like a reflection of herself. And I can't remember what page it's on. It's just so gorgeous I see this. It's page 3, panel 2. When that came back, I was like, this, He's just so pretty. I just love how he did the you know, that really captured everything I wanted her to be sort of thinking. Like, it's just sort of quieter, reflective moment. And it just was really beautiful. And then you have the city in the background, you have the lake, you have her. I just thought it was, I mean, honestly, it kind of took my breath away. It was just so cool.
The lack of emotion is so human. It's like she's taking herself in, right? It's
yeah, right. It's really, you know, it's just sometimes when we get caught up in those moments where everything around us has been going like just in a frenzy, kind of like it has been for her for so long. And then finally she gets kind of this minute of downtime and it's just like, wow, a lot of stuff has gone down around me. But I mean, I think his art is amazing. I love the bean images so much. And then for the colors, the Bollywood pieces, just, I love them so much. I was like, this is so great. It really to me reflects so much of her, because she's this fun character, and you know, she's got like her quips and her little jokes and everything, and it fits so much with Bollywood. And you know, I just loved it.
Yeah, there's like a quirkiness to it. Are you an avid comic book reader? I know you said you're writing two books right now, so maybe you're too busy to read comics, but I was curious if you are reading any.
I do. Well, I just I went to a couple comic book shops like yesterday and today because I wanted to be able to see. So I just picked up Hawkeye 1 and 2.
Oh, nice.
The, you know, Marika Nykamp's. Yes, yeah. The Kate Bishop one. And today I just picked up Avengers Forever because I had to. I was like, okay, I really want to check out this one. And then, I mean, from when I was a kid, Archie was the comic that I read the most as a kid. It was the 70s. I also read Wonder Woman, and there was a show in the 70s called Isis. They also, I know, it's like a terrible name now. It's like the worst, but she had comic books too. So I used to read some of hers, but so Hawkeye is the one I'm reading right now. I picked up that Avengers one, and yeah, I definitely try to get to some, because that's how you also learn, you know, the craft of doing it. And I just think it's so cool to see, you know, what other writers are doing and what other artists are doing. And it's just, it's the same as writing novels. You know, you learn, in order to write, you have to read.
Well, Avengers of Forever, particularly because there's another multiverse story, right?
I know. I told you, I really like the multiverse stories. And you know, I like the graphic novels too. Like I think one of the graphic novel series that I think is so fun are the Scholastic, sort of the kind of more aimed for middle grade ones, like Preeti Chivers. Those Spidey ones are hilarious. And of course the Miss Marvel one, Stretch Too Thin, I think was by Nadia Shamas, was really fun too. I love that comics and superheroes can be accessible to kids of all ages. Right. And you know, I just think that's pretty cool.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Especially Marvel comics across the board, really. I think we're about out of time, but if I had one more question, I would ask you,
yeah,
you know,
go for it.
Writing novels and then approaching scripting a comic, were there any tricks of the trade that you could use or couldn't use as you approached scripting?
Well, so I was very fortunate because Lauren and Caitlin really gave me kind of a comics 101, because it's obviously very, very, very different. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I love writing most in novels is dialogue. And so that really helped me with the comic writing. But, you know, I think one of the, I love challenging myself. So I oftentimes write in different genres. And one of the cool things about writing for comics is that there is a learning curve, and I get to learn, you know, this completely new thing, which is like not just how to write dialogue, which I know, but how to describe each panel so that the artist can take my words and you know, bring them to life literally on the page, how to understand how page turns work, and you know, how many panels can fit on a page, and understanding when you need to use dialogue versus SFX versus just an image. All that was like this really cool learning process, and I'm still learning as we're going along. So that's been especially rewarding for me.
Awesome. Well, Samira, I can't wait for your next series, but I also can't wait for the rest of the series to wrap up. Thank you so much for your time. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks so much. I hope you love number two. There's going to be some fun little surprises in the next few issues.
I mean, with Loki, how could there not be?